So the big question is this. How do entrepreneurial salespeople like us, who have traditionally sold alone and used gut and intuition to hit their number, take their innate talents and begin selling using science, technology, and the secrets of thousands who have done it before to crush their quota and change the world? That is the question, and this podcast provides the answer.
Welcome, everybody. We're excited to get going today. This is going to be a good one. I'm really excited. We're going to be talking about the five sales development plays to nail in 2019. So I'm excited to jump in and start talking about this. I have an esteemed guest today, not just a guest, but an esteemed guest. We got Dan Gottlieb, who is a sales development analyst at Topo. Dan, thanks for so much for joining. How the heck are you?
Doing excellent. Really, really excited to be here. Thanks a lot, Gabe.
Yeah. I think this will be fun to jump in and talk all things sales development. Do you mind before you jump in, tell us, audience knows me. I'm kind of the guy who's always doing these boring things. So they don't probably know you as well. Maybe they do. Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and what you do over there at Topo?
Absolutely. My name is Dan Gottlieb. I am a sales development analyst at Topo. And what that means is my responsibility is to conduct trend research around the top patterns and plays and practices across sales development today, the profession in entirety. Large companies, small companies, high growth companies, you name it. My job is to figure out what are the smartest and most effective things that companies at each one of those stages, what are they doing? And then my job is to help Topo's clients adopt those patterns and plays in their practices as well. I've got a background. I ran a region, was an enterprise seller for several years, software as well as media before I moved into sales development leadership and enablement leadership in general. But before
I love it.
My role on the service.
I love it. So basically what he's saying is he knows what he's talking about, especially when it comes to sales development. So before I turn it over to him, because I'm excited to get into these kind of plays, strategies that'll be taking us through, I want this to be as interactive as possible, you guys. So if you can, jump on the chat window, click that button at the bottom of your screen or wherever it is, type your name and where you're from. I'm going to be monitoring that chat, and I'd like this to be your questions as engaging as possible. So either the chat or the Q&A box, throw that in there. There we go. Yeah, we got Dennis coming from Slovakia. Oh, my goodness. Oliver, London, Sonia, UK, Fred, Trisha, Carrie, Daniel, Dan. Yeah, there we go. Okay, yeah, make sure you guys keep using that. We'll use it as much as we can as we go through the conversation. I'll be live on it. So Dan, with that, we're ready. Let's dive into the five plays.
All right, let's go. So in order to understand our point of view on these five plays, I think it's important to understand a little bit about Topo and what we do. We're a research and advisory firm. Think like Gardner Group, but instead of IT, we focus on three distinct practices. Sales development, which is my area of expertise. Marketing, specifically account-based marketing, and sales effectiveness. And a lot of our work is based on what we call our high-growth data set, right? Research that we conduct and store across high-growth companies that we use to inform the patterns and plays that you're going to see here today. And we're based here in Silicon Valley. A lot of our clients are some of the world's fastest-growing companies, not just small companies, but some of the largest companies as well. And what that gives us is a diverse and unique point of view into what some of the world's fastest growing companies are actually doing every day. And so our job is to decode these practices and bring them out both to the market and to our practices. And just quick plug before we jump into the plays, we're going to be talking about these and a whole lot more at our Topo Summit coming up in less than a month now. In a few weeks. And we're almost sold out of tickets. It's going to be an incredible event. We focused all the practitioners, only all of our presenters are practitioners, hyper-focused on what the top companies in the world are doing to grow their businesses and what you can take away from that. So go to that website if you want to attend. We are almost sold out of tickets.
Love it.
But with that said, right, I do want to make sure we talk about, before we jump into the plays, why these plays matter. You know, sales development today, we're just wrapping up our, and we're about to release our 2019 sales development benchmark report. And there's a couple of really important takeaways that I just want to talk about before we go in here. Sales development is no longer just an entry-level sales job. It is a complex and sophisticated role. It is a position within a business that more than half of the pipeline in a lot of businesses is flowing through sales development. And the charter of these roles is evolving significantly. There are specializations taking place across different kinds of segments. And sales development is branching out beyond just your traditional inbound and outbound. We're seeing them evolve into supporting channel partner strategies, expansion within customer accounts, right? It's no longer just a simple entry-level job where your job is to book meetings. It's becoming far more complex. They're touching way higher number of leads than they used to and supporting a larger number of organizations. And one other fact that we're seeing is the amount of resources that are being pumped into supporting sales development with operational staff and enablement staff. Those numbers are increasing rapidly because they're seeing, look, if we can get this team to move the needle a little bit, sometimes it just requires focusing how we support them, and that's worth the effort. It's an exciting time to be in sales development.
I love it. I want just to see kind of from our audience as we dive into this, and guys, put it into the chat if you don't mind. Wow. How many of you have a sales development team? Throw it in there. I assume most of you, but I'd love to see, do we have the majority of the couple hundred people here? Yeah. Looks like, go ahead and continue, Dan. Looks like you got, absolutely. I love totally. That.
And the way we're defining sales development here is an organization whose job is to develop a repeatable process for generating pipeline for the sales and revenue organization. Right.
Yeah. And one good question, Dan, that just came in is BDRs versus SDRs. I mean, sounds like we got some different naming conventions. A lot of people calling them different things on this. Account development reps, I've seen some people say. What is your take on that? Same role?
Honestly, so I've heard the role, there's a difference between a title and a role, right? Title is right, what you use to describe the role, but the role is a position whose job it is to take either a set of inbound or outbound targets and then generate using repeatable processes, a series of repeatable pipeline for the revenue organization. So what do you call that? I've seen them be ADRs, BDRs, SDRs, XDRs, ADMs, BDMs, BDCs, right? Focus more on what they do.
Got it. I like it.
What you call them. Honestly, what SDR, BDR, a lot of folks in organizations that are increasing complexity with the kinds of roles, the more kinds of teams that they have, they'll give them different titles to help distinguish between the two. So an example might be the SDR might handle a lot of inbound leads, and a BDR might be partnered with field sales to focus on more of a strategic set of outbound accounts. That would be a way to distinguish between the two. So internally, you know the difference. So
got it.
Great question though, honestly. Okay. So the impact of sales development, right? What we're seeing is that it's significant. 1 in 5 deals that is being sourced by sales development is resulting in closed one. The average SDR is generating $415,000 in pipeline a month. These aren't insignificant contributions to the business. And it's for these reasons that at the C level, they're wondering, how can we get more out of those organizations? Do we need to hire more? Do we need to hire differently? Do we need to resource them? Do we need to improve process? And what they're finding is the answers to these questions is yes to all of them. And as a result, we're seeing this sales development organization evolve into this highly strategic part of the revenue machine and getting a lot more attention than it used to, which is very, very exciting. And so when you, through some of our research, if I could distill down five things that sales development organizations are doing differently, what's happening right now, it's really getting back to the basics. Honestly, the organizations that are doing a great job, their SDRs are on the phone. They're talking to prospects again. We had this whole swinging motion, right? Sales development, the idea of it used to be, hey, look, here's a yellow pages book, pick up the phone and start dialing away because these are the kinds of people we think would make sense for us, right? And now with automation and access to contact data, this whole email automation, right, email blasting way of thinking had evolved. But now everyone's figuring out, look, SDRs have to be on the phone. If the SDRs are on the phone, we're gonna do a better job. We're gonna significantly increase the chances of having a more repeatable approach to building pipeline. Number two, your high performing outbound SDRs, what they really are is they're account based. And the way we distinguish between those two is that outbound SDRs are typically trying to prospect into a territory, a patch. They're given a bunch of tools. They're said, look, here's what we think good customers are. You go figure it out and come back to us with some meetings and opportunities. But what your high performing SDRs do, it's really interesting. You ask every SDR leader, they'll go, they'll look at, and they'll say, look, my high performers, they have some of the lowest amount of activity. But what they're doing is they're partnering with their AEs. They're looking at their top priority accounts. They're curating lists of contacts, sometimes even outside of the CRM. And they're focusing their efforts on making sure that they're staying on top of those priority accounts. And they're methodically trying to multi-thread within those accounts. High-performing SDRs, they're account-based. Mm-hmm. A number three trend, right? Onboarding. Maniacal focus on onboarding. And really what these organizations have figured out is that one, if every new SDR that I bring on board is able to get to quota in at least a month less than we typically expect, that can actually mean in the aggregate for every SDR we bring on, millions more in pipeline. Number four, I think every single sales professional in the world understands this, but it's the way that businesses and teams harness this as an organization that makes a difference. And it's that time management is absolutely a secret weapon, the way that it is part of your culture. And number five is SDRs are not just improving messaging with personalization, they're really using compelling offers or providing very compelling reasons to meet as a way to distinguish themselves from a lot of the noise in their messaging. And so because of these trends, there are five plays that we absolutely need to nail in 2019. And those plays are, number one, we have to develop a repeatable and prescriptive live call framework. I mean, a very, very straightforward way of knowing, did I have an effective call? No more, it felt good. It felt good is nice, but here's why I know it was an effective call. Number two, we got to focus all SDRs on multi-threading within those target accounts. I mean, not just getting a no from an entry-level persona and then saying, sorry, that account's not interested. I mean, truly multi-threading and with different messaging into different threads within a target account. Number three, design SDR onboarding activities for their role. Really specifically working backwards from what do you need to do your job? I know that sounds simple, obvious, and intuitive, but it's something that a lot of organizations tend to miss for several reasons. We'll talk about that when we get there, but it's designing SDR for their role. Number four, time management. How do we manage our time? We've got these tools that we're operating all of our day out of and sales engagement platforms. We want to leverage those tools for time management and prescribe. Here are different ways you can filter to spend these blocks of time. And number five, try and offer in your messaging that is 100% valuable to the prospect. And at the end of this, we have some bonus content where we're going to talk about how to master the essentials in your SDR tech stack. And we're going to talk about what are the essentials and how to master them. Okay. Gabe, are you ready? We're ready to jump into each one of these one at a time.
I love it, man. Let's do it. Let's go all five.
Let's do it. So number one, SDRs are talking to prospects again. From our research, 40% of SDR leaders cite being able to execute a live call as one of the top factors for their teams to be successful. And, you know, a story about this, you walk in, you hear this concept of the silent sales floor, right? I've walked into a client literally last week and it was dead silent on the sales floor. And, you know, we sit there and say, well, why is it that it's so quiet, right? And there's usually a few different reasons behind it. Reason number one might be something like people aren't on the phone anymore. Reason number two might be something like we're not confident when we actually get on the phone. Those are two very common variables, and they're both actually, number one isn't true. Buyers are on the phone. We just need to use the phone as a channel to get people to go over to our emails. And when they do pick up the phone, a lot of the time it's very true. We don't have a plan. We're given a script and said, here's a script. Let's do some role plays. Good. Got it. All right. You're ready to go on the phone. And then we do ad hoc coaching. And so what we're talking about here is developing a repeatable and prescriptive live call framework so that you can break down each element of a phone call and then train your team and create a common vocabulary around how a good call, what are all the elements of those calls, and then practice them one by one. And so our framework is creating context. Why are you reaching out? And practicing that opener over and over and over again. I call it, during the onboarding process, an opener hour, where literally I'm going to lock you in a room and we're going to practice like a basketball player taking free throws over and over and over again until it is literally ingrained in your memory, so that when you pick up the phone, you know exactly what to say when someone says hello. The second piece, convey value. There are three different ways that an SDR can convey value on the phone. They can tailor a value prop, they can share a relevant use case story, or they can share an insight. Very simple. Those are three ways to convey value. At the end of a phone call, I want to be able to say, how did you convey value on that call? And an SDR say back to me, well, I tailored this value prop, I shared this use case story, and I used this insight around need based on some research that I did on LinkedIn in order to elicit to start the conversation. Of course, qualifying, that's the point of the call. The key here is not just giving SDRs a list of questions and expecting them to just pepper through those lists of questions. Instead, we want to train them on conversational skills to leverage when they convey value, i.e. tell a use case story, to then parlay that into asking a thoughtful qualifying question. And effectively, when you're on the phone, you're either conveying value, responding to something that the prospect said, or asking follow-up questions and qualifying. And if you break it down and keep it simple and be realistic, this is a repeatable approach to how to talk about how a live call went. And so, of course, at the end, you want to teach them how to close for the next meeting. And we had a client, they sell large commercial printers, literally, those big giant humming machines the size of your bedroom. And effectively, they had no live call framework. And after implementing a live call framework, they saw a significant jump in opportunities, literally doubling the number of opportunities, and a significant increase in the pipeline that came out of that as well. And the reason for this is their market, right? Printers, owners of printing companies, they pick up the phone, but their team just didn't know what to say. But once they focused on conveying value, they were able to hold better conversations, hold longer conversations, and set up more meaningful next step conversations for the team. And so my question for you, Gabe, you know, you've worked in your business has worked with a lot of different organizations around live calls. I mean, the purpose of your platform is, of course, to facilitate a higher volume of high quality sales engagement interactions. How have you seen some of your clients do with regards to live calls?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple interesting things here. I want to answer your question, but I might actually start with this if it's okay, Dan. There was an interesting question from Chris wanting to dive a little deeper on this creating context concept. Is there a couple example openers or is it always just the reason for placing the call when it comes to creating that context?
Yeah, you want someone within the first sentence of the word hello to understand exactly what it is they should expect out of the next minute or so out of this interaction in order to actually progress into a meaningful conversation. So examples of openers, in our framework, and what we recommend is suggesting time. Now, there's a lot of different methodologies and philosophies out there. Mm-hmm. In our methodology, and what we typically recommend is that you ask for a specific amount of time, i.e., can I take the next 30 seconds to explain why I'm calling? And then from there, we can decide if it makes sense to speak further. That's something that we typically recommend because it's way easier and it's a yes, no. And the point is, if they say yes, you have a plan for that. Great, I'm calling because, and I throw in my tailored value prop. If the answer is no, totally understand, here's why I'm calling. Either way, you're still going to deliver your value prop, right? You're just, and the difference is whether your following question is asking for time or if your following question is to start a conversation.
Yeah.
So that's one framework. There's a lot of different philosophies and trainers out there that have different methods, and that's totally okay. I think the point is, the motif is, the buyer or the person that you're selling should know exactly what they should are expecting to happen out of the next minute or so in order to be able to welcome what you're saying.
Yeah. I like that honesty play, Dan. I mean, we've seen a lot of success with that. I mean, just very upfront, you know, I know some people call it like an upfront contract, but just telling them, look, this is who I am and this is what I want to do. And if that's okay, let's move forward. If not, that's also okay. You know, some of our sales development reps have found success just finding a reason to call. We've had a lot of success with direct mailers, for example. And so using that as a, hey, you know, this is Gabe with Inside Sales. Did you get something or did you get that? And it gives them kind of spurs the reason to call. I think that's where you were going, Chris. So, you know, having a reason, providing context, I think is a good one. A couple other questions that came in, Dan, about qualification. How much qualification are people getting in that interaction? You know, there's different models out there, the BANT, the ANIMS, I can't remember some of the others, but they're all out there. Are you seeing typically that people are getting just a couple quote unquote questions answered, or are they doing full kind of needs analysis? You know, as BDRs do more and more needs analysis, or how's that working on the qualification?
So what we're seeing here is it depends by market. It depends by segment within those markets, right? So, and it depends on your sales cycles, really. So that's a vague answer, a more specific answer. In larger organizations, let's say you're going after, you're a highly technical product, you're selling a data center product, and you're selling into large enterprises, right? What you're qualifying is, are you interested in talking to my sales rep?
Right.
Because I've already identified you as a target account. You're in my head and in our business's head, pre-qualified to meet with my sales team. So my job is to drum up interest and qualify whether or not you're interested, whether or not you're a right person, and figure out if there's a problem that you have or are willing to listen to us talk about, how we might solve it. That would be on that example versus an organization that has hundreds of inbound leads per day that comes in from demand gen activities. Their job is going to be to make sure that they're protecting the sales rep's time and making sure they're only talking to qualified opportunities. So it varies. And I think what matters is not trying to figure out a broad stroke of here's what the qualification definition should be and saying this is it and it applies to every single SDR opportunity. Instead, thinking about your segment, thinking about are we generating at-bats for the sales team?
Yep.
Versus when we're going outbound, or are we protecting their time from the thousands of leads that we get a month?
Interesting. No, I love it. All right, let's continue, man. Let's jump to play two.
Cool. All right. So
I wanted to take this one, man. So I made Dan put this in. Guys, for you, as we think about this next question and the next play, what type of sales development motion are you actually running? Throw it in the chat box real quick. We've kind of named high velocity in this instance is more of an inbound model. So are you really focusing in on your sales development team? It's just going after inbound leads and it is more of a quantity type play? Or are you more on that account-based side? That's often termed more of an outbound account-based marketing, account-based sales type play. Or maybe you're blended. Let's see kind of where people are. Outbound account, so a couple hybrids in there. Yeah, not too many high velocity, interesting. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, no, this is really good. So this one is for my outbound teams. What we're finding is that sales development organizations, 41% of them have a dedicated account-based team. And what that means is that those SDRs are given a list of named accounts and said, focus on these accounts.
Yes. Yes.
We named these the accounts that you want to go after. And honestly, if you look at what your high-performing outbound SDRs are doing anyways, they've made that list for themselves based on what all their AEs are sharing with them as the accounts they want to go after. And so if that's the case, right, I wanted to give some prescriptive advice based on what we're seeing the highest performing organizations do when they are giving their SDRs these target account lists. So the first one is, how many accounts per SDR? Let's be realistic about capacity. Well, it really depends on the size of the overall company's target list, it turns out. So if you've got a really small, focused set of targets, look, these are the 100 we know we need to get this year as a business. Great. You can break that out into maybe 15 to 25 per SDR. Those are your most experienced SDRs that are really strategic versus 40 to 60 as the list continues to grow versus 80 to 100. And these are not just filtered in every single month. I mean, these are the accounts that they have been given that is their patch to focus on for a sustained period of time. I'm talking minimum 6 months. And so within that, based on your average deal size, you can consider the number of contacts they should try to go after within an account to go up, right? So the bigger the deal, you should say maybe at least 9 within a business at a time. Notice how it's not 30 and 40. You should not spam an entire business at the same time. You should methodically go after a small segment of different threads ranging of between 5 to 9 contacts per account. And this gives you focus on how to approach your day, your week, your month.
Interesting. Interesting. And do you feel like, I mean, this is, do you see people getting pretty close to this, or do you feel like people are often way, you know, way above it or way below it? Is this where most of the industry is kind of trending?
We find that a lot of the sales development organizations that don't follow this, they suffer from a lack of direction where, and there's either two schools of thought and they're either extreme on either side, right? Extreme number one is I just need to find 1 or 2 people per business and I'm going to throw them all into the same outbound touch pattern. And then I'm just going to go. And then all of a sudden I have exhausted my account list when really I've only gone after a very small surface level subset, versus the other more extreme where someone will take one company at a time. They'll find everyone with the term marketer in it. They'll throw all of them into a list and then they'll hit them all with the same message. Right. Those are typically the two errors where a lot of teams tend to also struggle is knowing, well, when do I stop? When do I stop prospecting into an account at a time, right? So I think that what you're seeing here and this in this chart on the right is that top performing organizations, when they actively target accounts with these account-based programs, are going after more contacts, but they're more methodical about who they're going after and they follow them for a more sustained duration of time.
Yeah, that makes tons of sense. Do you feel like, interesting question just came in from Nicole. Nicole, see if I'm answering this right. So she's kind of talking about running a high velocity model, but it appears that the overall strategy isn't aligned to that inbound motion. And the expectation is actually for the team to go outbound. So her question is, you know, it seems like technology, process, and strategy all need to be aligned to your motion. And I think you basically answered it, Nicole. Like, if you've got a high velocity model, but the expectation is to run account based, then yes, aligning technology, process, and then overall kind of plays, campaign/strategy. That's got to be in that motion, or yeah, you're just going to be fighting yourself, as I think you've kind of indicated there.
So. Yeah. We are of like mind. I think, how do you tell the story though? How do you, cause this is really what you're asking. How do I surface this insight and how do I tell that story so that people care? One way is to look at your SDR team's quota and say, okay, well, of that quota, what percentage of them should come from my inbounds and what percentage of them should come from my outbounds? And does that then match that percentage? Does that then match the time management expectations of my team? And what often happens, we see a lot of hybrid environments fall into what's happening to your team, is they're constantly fending off or fighting off a margin of the marketing inbound leads. And as a result, really struggle to make the time for their organizations to go outbound because those expectations aren't clear. And so really having those expectations clearly defined in partnership with the overall revenue leadership organization and asking for that kind of clarity is very feasible so that you can help structure your team's time and guide them in the right direction.
Do you find, Dan, that it is most optimal to run a blended approach where, you know, if you're running an account based, all the inbound leads come to these SDR reps? Or do you say, you know what, look, if you're account based, just go outbound, do what you do. These inbound leads, even if they're associated with one of our target accounts, it's going to be handled by these guys over here?
Oh, love this question. So if someone's got a named account and an inbound lead comes in for that account, that's going to that rep that owns that account, right? Yeah. But then you have a plan for everyone else, right? You've got a plan for everyone else. And we're actually seeing a lot of businesses segment that way. Well, they'll have teams that are focused on these larger, maybe enterprise and strategic sized accounts, and that they've got these SDR teams that are focused on set targets. And then everything that happens around those accounts goes to that team. But then there's this other team of SDRs that's focusing on everyone else in their market that's coming in through demand gen activities, et cetera. Mm. That's something that we're seeing common, especially as you scale. If you're a smaller organization and you don't have those resources, you maybe got 5-8 BDRs, SDRs total on the team. You're maybe, you just raised a round of Series B funding and you now have some aggressive growth targets with what you got. Then in that environment, those are the teams that need to really make the clear expectations in our revenue plan. What matters more and how should my time be spent so that I can judiciously help my team manage their time that way?
Yeah, I love it. This is an interesting question here. And this probably goes to some of the other things we'll talk about with technology and scaling. You know, Charlotte wrote in and said, look, we just have these territories and they've got a lot of accounts. We don't have enough SDRs to cover them. You know, how should we be thinking about, you know, covering that? She says, we have so many accounts. Leadership has given our team higher goals. So my team is just email blasting and then praying for success. I mean, we're seeing a decent amount of that, right, Dan? I mean, sales development reps, I had a leader in Boston tell me, you know, my sales development reps are really just email marketers. I think I could do this probably more effective, you know, a different way. How would you know, thinking of Charlotte's specific challenge there? Yeah, she's got a lot to cover and not enough heads. Is there a great way to solve that problem?
Well, you want to, so is there a great way to solve that problem? It starts with identifying and defining as an organization and asking up the chain for a definition of an ideal customer profile. An ideal customer profile is a set of attributes that describe the highest value existing clients that you have on your business that you can then use to take that giant list of accounts and then filter it by the accounts that have the highest priority and then focusing on going after those accounts, because realistically, you only have so much time and you only have so much bandwidth. So the question that you want to ask yourself is, what matters more, right? Spamming the larger side of the market with a generic message or going after lookalike accounts where we can tell a better story and being more methodical. And so my advice to you would be, can you try and trim that list of your SDRs down to maybe 150 target accounts for each SDR for the next 3 months or so, and then having them commit to that list to start with and focus? That would be my recommendation for you. Example attributes is usually things like employee size, revenue for the business, industry that they're in, existing technology that they've invested in, right? Size of certain kinds of teams that you're working on. Do they have a history of mergers and acquisitions? Does that matter to your business, right? Those kinds of attributes. And then that would be my high-level advice. I encourage you to look on Topo's blog around ideal customer profile for a more prescriptive approach to how you actually go build that.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. All right, man, let's jump to play three. Let's do it.
All right. Okay. Onboarding. I mean, look, every single person in here has this issue. Every single sales development leader has challenges. Hiring, recruiting, hiring, retaining, onboarding your reps, right? Here's the deal. Onboarding, the winners in onboarding are getting their reps to quota in under 2 months in some cases, 1 to 2 months most likely. Organizations that are struggling, 3 to 4 months, right? Which brings the average ramp to about 3 months. So the question is, how do we, right? Based on literally almost half of sales development leaders say, look, the top factor that makes us successful is the fact that we are excellent at hiring and onboarding. And anybody that's been doing this for a while would say, yeah, of course, right? But it invites this question of how do I onboard in a way that brings the ramp down? And so these are three things that you can do. And the main theme is focus the onboarding on their role. Don't send them to the new hire sales training and expect them to get value out of sitting there learning about the sales process in their first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yes, that is important, but how do we get ramped down? How do we get them focused? We chunk out in steps their learning over time that focus them on getting feeling comfortable executing their job. So what's the first one? Memorize the challenges and benefits of the entry point persona, the people that they're actually going to be talking to, that realistically pick up the phone, that realistically give you intel about their business. Let's memorize what they care about and benefits that they've experienced from working with us so that I can get better at having a conversation with them faster. And once you send me in to go learn about my product, I'm going to have way more context because I understand who cares about it, right? And that's the focus here, is focus on training about people that they sell to, then train about industry. Number two, don't just focus on how to write an email, how to make a call, how to use LinkedIn. Focus on how to efficiently execute all of those through a single platform, the sales engagement platform. And I'm not just talking about letting them figure it out with their cube buddy, right, or the person that sits next to them. I'm talking about prescribing, here is the window workflow that works. Here is how you execute an email task, make a phone call. Here's how you do the research, and here's where you store it, and here's what efficient behavior looks like. Why does that matter? Because that is the difference in scale, is being able to repeat those behaviors that are actually going to make them efficient around research and executing tasks. And then number three goes back to the live call framework. In the first 2 weeks, they need to be able, in my opinion, the first week on this one, you need to be able to deliver a live call opener, tailor my value prop to the entry point persona, and tell me a use case story in a conversational way. And here's a good barometer. I always love this exercise, okay? Imagine I am your buyer, okay? I'm sitting in the aisle seat of an airplane. You're coming back from some trip. You sit in the middle seat. We end up talking, and I tell you what I do. And your first thought is, oh, this is someone that I should be selling to, right? Well, what would you actually say that makes you sound like a human, right? How would you open that? What would that value prop, and how would you tell them a story about how he helped them? And that's usually the exercise that I would recommend running through to get them conversational and confident with what they're saying. You focus on those three things, you're going to get them executing their job much faster, and it will make all the other stuff that the business forces them to learn around product training, et cetera, it'll be in way more of an efficient context for them.
Yeah, interesting. Couple of things, Dan, on this. Onboarding, such an important part of the process. Seems like people are still just getting them in. A lot of people just get them in, throw them on the phones, you know, and the shadow. It's like shadow other bad reps and see how many bad things you can learn from them. And then don't do that. Do the good things, right? That seems to be sometimes the default onboarding process. Couple of questions. One was just from Chester, and this is a little before the onboarding. You know, he says, my company has a hard time ramping. It's about a 2 month when they're at goal. The problem is we have this pipeline problem of getting people to actually interview and then getting them hired. Have you seen any creative ways to get more candidates just into the actual funnel Little up above onboarding. Any quick thoughts there?
Yeah, we're talking about recruiting and hiring here now, which is a very important topic too, by the way. So creative approaches. So the first is look at your hiring profile. Are you being too, or are you looking for the right characteristics? We often see a lot of businesses say, we need experience. It depends on what you're looking for and what you sell too, by the way. So I don't want to, I'm not just, this is not a flippant recommendation across the board, because it definitely varies here, but it depends on what you're looking for. A lot of the time we look for people that have proven sales experience, that have been trained somewhere else, right? They can come in, they can do the job, but that also often means I'm inviting them in to bring bad habits. And that narrows down your hiring pool, because your recruiters, they can't tell the difference, right? They're just looking for the experience piece. If you want to open it up, the creative ways to get high quality people is look at the character attributes. Are they driven? Can you look for that? Are they motivated by something other than sales, right? If they are, they could be incredibly effective salespeople. Do they have coachability? Can you look for those two things? If so, and you're open to saying, look, if you are driven, right, you have the ability to communicate, and you are coachable, I'm willing to hire you. And yeah, if you're willing to open up the hiring profile like that, then these creative tips are going to matter, be a little bit easier for you to think about. Number one, Apple Store. That's it. I'll leave that there. Apple Store employees, young Apple Store employees, highly excellent salespeople. Number two, one of my favorites, enterprise car sales. They've got a great sales training program. Number three, of course, going for, you know, there's a few other more traditional routes. Number four, teachers. The soft skills that teachers have to have. They're organized. They're communicators. If you think about, a teacher has to be able to talk about us to a student, talk to a principal, talk to their peers, talk to their parents. And they have to tell the message of the same student five different ways. That is very similar to the skill set that you need in order to multi-thread into a target account, right? So when you take your eyes, you ease a little bit off of, do you have sales experience, and think more about, do you have human interaction experience that translates into sales? You're gonna find that there's a lot of excellent people out there. And I'm going to say this, it's an aggressive take, but I think you can drop a college degree off of a requirement.
Oh, man. You're going to make some people mad with that, man. That's one of those debated. That's heavily debated, but I like you taking a position, man.
Yeah.
I like you taking a position. That's an interesting. Oh, Chester said he agrees. So you got, you got some people in chat. Uh-oh, what do you guys think? Do you need a college education to be an SDR? Right now we got no's. Whoa, Charlotte went capital no. Charlotte, absolutely not. Gee. Uh-oh. It looks like most people agree with you. I thought that was a little more debatable. But I love it. All right, man. Well, let's jump to play number four while people kind of argue back and forth on the chat of, do you need a college degree to be an SDR? A communication degree. Brandon says you need a communication degree. Done. Sold. Got it. Love it, Brandon. All right. Number four, time management. Let's do it.
It is a secret weapon, Gabe. Here's what we mean by that. I'm not saying you need to micromanage your day or micromanage your team's day. When we say the job is complex, right? Everyone has sat down, looked at their to-dos, looked at their market, and had this kind of stomach fallout moment where you go, yeah, how am I gonna get this done? Oh my gosh. And you just get overwhelmed, and then you're anxious, and then you have a bad morning, and then you have a bad day, and then you go home, and then it all starts again the next day. Everybody has been in that cycle. How do you break out of that cycle? It's with a process, and it's just getting back to the basics. So here's what we recommend how to simplify the day. Break it into 3 to 4 blocks of time where you focus on specific tasks in those time, right? I'm following up with some of my inbound tasks or my tasks or my inbound queue or tasks from my outbound programs from last week, etc. That's reserved here. Then I build in a break, right? Now I'm going to do research on 10 net new contacts from my target account. Then I'm going to go to lunch. Then I'm going to come back and do work on outbound for this event that we have coming up. You get my point?
Yep. Yep.
4 blocks of time, 3 to 4. And you can include in one of those and seclude it off as my meeting time. That's when my team meeting is. That's when that block of time is taken, right? making sure you're prescriptive and say, what am I going to get done? It becomes more realistic if you say, what am I going to get done in these three blocks of time today? That makes a lot of sense.
Interesting.
So how do I do it, right? Okay, I've been working. You get to the steady state. You're 4, 5, 6 months into the gig, and you've got all these tasks. This is where having an approach to your sales engagement platform changes the game for you. And as a leader, prescribing, here are the filters that you can use for your tasks, right? That creates a vocabulary around time management that hasn't really been exploited as much as I think it could be in this profession.
Yeah, but Dan, I got to stop because this one's kind of a knuckle. This is kind of a head scratcher. I was going to say knuckle scratch, but that doesn't mean any head scratchers. I was scratching my own head.
Yeah.
Is it because there's a lack of tools? I mean, you know, back in the day, the old Franklin Covey lovers, if there's any of you out there still, the old blue time management binder. I think I had one when I was like going into college. I never actually used it. I didn't understand it. But are there not a lot of tools? Why is this... I would say nobody does this well. I mean, it's just not happening in my experience.
Yeah. There's two realities for why. The first one is that everyone is different and everyone has a different approach to how they manage their time. So they come in with their own expectations or lack of expectations of themselves, right? So it's absence of having a plan. The second is over-engineering the plan and then not being flexible enough when that plan needs to change, yeah. Right? Let's say an inbound comes in at 9. Let's see, look at my day. I get an inbound that comes in at 8:50, right? Yeah. I'm following up, but I have an inbound. And that's okay. That is okay. This is a plan that is simple in that you're breaking out your chunks and you want to focus within executing within each one of those chunks. But this isn't over-engineering the day. Right? Because there are only three blocks. There's only three sets of tasks that I'm going after. So that's step one. The next is not having a detailed approach or not having a focused approach to how you keep your tasks organized, right? So a lot of us have them all over the place. I've got a few in Salesforce. I've got a few in my calendar. I've got some in my notebook, right? So committing to a single source of sales development task execution. I'm not saying you need your personal calendar in here, by the way.
Yeah.
When it comes to figuring out who I need to talk to and why, that is the reason why. And one more reason is because they don't trust the quality of their touch patterns. So by the time they look at their Salesforce task and say, oh, I'm at email 5. Well, I don't even know what to say in email number 5 to this prospect anymore. I don't have a plan, right? Yeah. So I'm just going to skip that task to go to someone that's a little bit more interesting, maybe on, you know, email number 4 or 2, because I have a bias towards them because I haven't exhausted that one yet.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, we're getting a lot. Do you mind popping down just to keep moving? I think this will be a good segue. I've had a couple of questions. You know, a couple of people said, and Paul's just throwing it out here. He's throwing me a lob here. You know, what are some of the most common sales engagement platforms? Paul, you don't need to look any further than insidesales.com. We've got a great sales engagement platform, but a couple of people here, Sean asked and said, look, one of my biggest challenges is task management. And we actually went out and asked about a little over 1,000 sales development reps. We said, how much time are you actually spending selling? And we let them define what selling activities were. Oh, it came back with 33.2% of their time in their minds is spent selling. I just said, Dan, I was like, you got to be kidding me. That means 70% of their time is trying to do figure, admin, communicate, all of these things. And we've got to find, there's always going to be time for other tasks, you guys, but boy, that number has got to come up. So yeah. When it comes to task management tools, InsideSales.com, we call it playbooks. It does allow reps to be able to, one, load in their current contacts based on target accounts that Dan was talking about, put those into sequence or plays, and then have the system actually come back to them and say, hey, today, here's the third email you were going to do, the second phone call, the first direct mail, or the next social touch. And Shauna, when it comes to that type of thing, you have got to find a sales engagement tool like an insidesales.com. And I'm biased here, but where we are now, if you're trying to manage all the different interactions with even 20 target accounts and 6 or 7 contacts per, that's going to be tough. So definitely recommend you go that direction. And sorry, Dan, I had to kind of make that plug, but I thought it fit pretty nicely into some of those.
No, don't apologize. It's important. And even to come back, if you look at your eye in the bottom left corner of my screen, right? What this is doing is it allows you to focus. Look, here's your day. Your day is to either work your existing tasks or add new contacts or leads into touch patterns, right? Or plays or sequences. And so common filters would include lead source. Look, I'm going to work all of the webinars from last week as an example, right? Target account list. So specifically, which list am I going off of or which tier? Time zone, right? And some products too offer ways to tag, perhaps by industry. And so this is just what matters less is what matters less is that you just execute a bunch of tasks. What matters more is that you know why you're going after those and you have a plan for them, right?
Yeah. And we got a couple people asking that, right? And I probably should have mentioned it. If you pop back for a second, Dan, I got one more plug here, but those little blue circles on that icon there, you guys, is a prioritization mechanism. So it is the days of just spamming and, you know, hitting as many people as possible. I think those days are behind us. It is about saying, hey, of the people I need to go after, which of them have kind of the highest propensity to work with me or buy from me? And then, you know, you order and strategize your day there. It's this balance of quality and quantity you've got to find. So not easy. But again, I think there's a place that if you're not thinking about quality and not just quantity, then, you know, I think you're a couple years behind in the race.
100%. And which invites us to, okay, great, Gabe, we've prioritized. We've got our lists. Now, what do I put into the messaging, right? And so number five, what we're seeing teams do is focus not just on showing, hey, look, I did some research. You want to meet and do a demo, right? Because that is effectively what a lot of teams are training. Show your research, offer the demo, see who comes back and says yes, right? What we're talking about here is that experience for the prospect. They're like, if I want to see a demo, that's somewhat valuable, but it doesn't help me understand that you know what problems I have and that you demonstrate expertise in how to solve them. And so what we're talking about here is in your messaging framework, in the calls, in the emails, what you're focusing on is an offer, right? What am I going to get out of meeting with you? And using these offers to convey expertise of the buyer's problems to be solved. Yeah, so let me give you an example of that here, right? What I recommend you do is that you try an offer that is 100% valuable to the prospect, meaning picture yourself in the prospect's seat, going about their day, coming back from a bunch of meetings, flipping through their phone and seeing this email and saying, is that valuable to me? Right? So thinking less from, I want to set up a demo and focus more on, hey, I want to tell you stories of similar clients that had this specific problem and how they overcame it. And that problem, you don't want it to be generalized. You want that problem to matter to the specific person or the role that they have, right? And that's where that multi-threading approach and having different messages for different personas matters a lot. And I could probably spend 3 hours talking about what that looks like in more detail.
This one, Dan, it's like I've been kind of jumping on this train lately. I thought I was alone, but you guys obviously beat me to the punch as always. Guys, this one, it's you know, you've got to give to get. You've got to. So often, and I think we have absolutely, unequivocally fooled ourselves with that line on the left side. Like, I am giving value, Gabe. I'm giving them a demo. No, you're not. That's not for them. That's for you. What you're doing is you're asking them for 30 minutes of their time to ask them a bunch of questions. Like, what's in it for me? Eventually, maybe at the end of the demo, the second meeting, you know, they're going to get some value, but it's like, guys, I think you've got to flip that. You got to give value before you get value. You got to give value before you get value. I had to say that twice because it's so damn important, Dan.
I agree that you need to give value to get value. And specifically the way that you do that, if you're a SDR leader, if you're an SDR manager, if you're a director of resources right now, what I highly recommend you do is look at your messaging and say, is that 100% valuable to the prospect?
I love it.
And if you don't agree, or if you say, you know what, because here's another trap. This works. It's worked, right? Here's an example of a person saying, turning into a deal because of that. Awesome. Test it. Try it. See what happens. Okay. Okay. Quick question for everybody, Gabe.
Let's do that. This was the bonus. This was actually the bonus, and we're running up on time. We had a couple people drop, but we are holding strong, man. A couple hundred people still here tuned in. Again, guys, keep the questions coming. Thinking of your tech stack, specifically for sales development. Again, BDRs, what do you have? One, and so think about if you've got like a lead scoring provider, you've got a sales engagement tool, you've got a coaching tool, you've got a data provider. You don't necessarily have to use names. I mean, I know most of you are using insidesales.com out there. Wink, wink. So you probably don't need to mention that, but some of you are mentioning names, and that's fine if you want to mention names. Okay, we got 3-5 too many.
3-5 too many.
Also an appropriate answer.
All right, Gabe.
Seven. Seven, David. Wow, that's a lot. Okay, good.
How many do you think the highest performing teams typically have in their tech stack?
I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking of my own team here, and it's got to be around 4 or 5, right? I mean, in that area.
Based on our research, high-performing teams have 5 to 8 tools in their tech stack.
All right, David, you weren't looking so dumb after that. I thought 9 you were going to be – I was going to call you out.
But 5 to 8. Here's what matters. There are different – there are core essentials that everybody needs. There are core essentials that everybody needs. And then there are additional tools that matter based on how you're going to market, right? Mm-hmm. And what matters is that you have a focused approach. You know why you have these tools. You know when you're going to use them. And so let's go look at exactly what those are. From our research, essential is a Navy. You have to have your CRM.
Yes.
You've got to have data solutions, contact data, account data.
Yes.
And look, if you're not on LinkedIn today, you have to get on LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It's just not really an option anymore. We talk social, we talk about Twitter, we talk about it's LinkedIn, right? For B2B sales development, it's LinkedIn. And then on top of that, you need a hub, you need an operating console for how to manage multiple channels. And that is a sales engagement platform. And a sales engagement platform typically includes email and dialing and LinkedIn, right? The ability to execute those tools from a single hub.
I love those.
The essentials. But before you go buy a bunch of other stuff, right? Make sure you're mastering the little things. Make sure that your data strategy between your CRM, your data solutions, and your engagement tool are tight, that your statuses are tight so that you can get thoughtful data about what's actually working and what's not, and leading indicators into what your team is doing. Double down on that before you start adding stuff into your stack. Make sure you know, how are we storing our research that we do on LinkedIn inside of our CRM so that I can leave, as I call, gifts for myself from the past. So, of course, there is additional tools as well, like chat, direct mail, and intent data. But you got to master the essentials first before you start adding additional tech into your stack. And mastering the essentials, like I said, includes clean data strategy and focusing or asking yourself, is the messaging and the way that we're using the engagement platform and the data together efficient? If not, you got to look at ways to improve those efficiencies by diagnosing where the issues are.
Oh, I love it, man. So a couple questions coming in on this. Sony just made an interesting one. Are you seeing much use of LinkedIn overseas?
LinkedIn is the center of what's happening in Europe, in EMEA, as a result of GDPR. LinkedIn is becoming almost like a focal channel.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. One person, Paul, mentioned kind of what do you mean by, you mentioned intent. Can you kind of, throw that out a little bit?
So intent data is intent data. There are data providers, there are companies that are effectively through their tools providing insights into accounts that are researching certain topics, right? And that would be considered intent data. So if I was selling Topo to Gabe, right? And I looked at my intent data and I saw that insidesales.com was surging highly on SDR patterns and plays as a keyword search, for example, I might say, hey, SDR, you got to go call insidesales.com, right? And so it's only as effective where a lot of organizations struggle is operationalizing the insight of, hey, this business is surging on a specific kind of topic, and then sending that to the right rep and giving them the tools and the efficiency to figure out, when do I go look at the intent data? What do I glean from the insight? And how do I use that to tailor my messaging, if at all? And what does that feedback loop look like separate from the rest of their day-to-day tasks? That's where a lot of businesses tend to struggle with intent data.
Yeah, interesting, you guys. So a couple things I'll see if I can kind of answer out here just from the chat. So couple questions about other types of technologies. The thing I like that Dan did here is, you know, these are the, I'd agree, Dan, these are kind of the essentials. Doesn't mean there isn't other stuff out there. A couple people mentioned, you know, conversation intelligence. A couple people mentioned, you know, calendaring, opportunity management. Look, all things equal, there's a lot of great technologies out there, but when it comes to sales development, CRM, having strong data, social, and then some sort of an engagement tool is probably the place to go. A lot of people seem like intent is new. Again, we'll make sure this recording gets out there, but as Dan said, it's kind of what it is. It is what it says it is. Of your customers or current prospects, are they thinking about you? And is there a way that we can capture that and feed that in so that you can make that usable? But again, I thought Dan gave a pretty good definition of that. So good. Dan, we're kind of getting wrapping up here on time. What else we got? Oh, that was kind of our bonus secret, right?
That was it. Yeah, absolutely. I think we've run up on time. I think, you know, it's important to bring up,
this is, man, I've made so many plugs, this might be embarrassing, but part of your essential stack you guys should be thinking about, and I'll say it again, I'm biased, our sales engagement tool set called Playbooks matches a lot of the abilities of prioritizing and then executing on your sales engagement strategy. Think phone, email, think social, think direct mailer, those types of things as you think about executing your prospecting strategy. So if you are interested to learn about that essential piece of your SDR stack, you better go to that link up top, grab that demonstration. I'd be happy to walk you through or one of my guys. And then please continue the conversation. Grab me on LinkedIn. Let's continue to talk about some of these essential pieces. I'm sure Dan would agree. So Dan, with that, I think I'm done with my piece. Why not over to you as we wrap here?
My last piece is, look, this has been a great conversation, Gabe. I've loved it. And you want to talk about these topics and look at a lot more patterns and plays of top sales development companies in the world, come to the Topo Summit. I'm going to be hosting the sales development track. We have a really exciting speaker lineup of practitioners, everyone that is in the job today talking about what they're doing to kick ass. So that's it.
I love it. All right, guys, I think we answered most of the questions. We did run up on our hour, and I have, unfortunately, I've got to go. I think Dan does as well, but such a great talk track, Dan. Again, guys, please continue the conversation on LinkedIn and have a fantastic day.
Want more sales secrets? Go to salessecrets.io to receive copies of our latest research and best practice content to help you crush your quota.